I want to take a second to remind you to sign up for the Poso Daily Brief. It is completely free. It'll be one email that's sent to you every day. You can stop the endless scrolling, trying to find out what's going on in your world. We will have this delivered directly to you, totally for free. Go to humanevents.com/Poso. Sign up today. It's called the Poso Daily Brief. Read what I read for show prep. You will not regret it. Humanevents.com/Poso. Totally free. The Poso Daily Brief.
What happens when the fourth turning meets fifth generation warfare?
A commentator, international social media sensation, and former Navy intelligence veteran.
This is Human Events with your host, Jack Posobiec.
Deliver us from
11 months ago, the Washington Post reported that the FBI misused the 702 database and surveillance program, the surveillance tool, misused it 278,000 times. 278,000 times they didn't follow the law and the rules that were already in place. If the FBI that wouldn't follow the procedures in place and 278,000 times didn't follow those procedures, are new requirements, whether it's in the traditional FISA or in the 702 program, going to be enough to safeguard Americans' liberties?
Norfolk Southern has agreed to a $600 million settlement over the East Palestine train derailment. The proposed payout will settle several class action lawsuits over the derailment and toxic chemical spill.
I think this is the wrong case at the wrong time, Ari. I think that the case is in many ways stale at this juncture. You're talking about conduct that occurred some 8 years ago. And I think that when you are going to potentially deprive tens of millions of Americans of their choice for the presidency of the United States, I think it's a mistake to do it based on a case of this nature.
So what do I make of the chorus of voices from the Fed? I think they're seeing what we're seeing, which is they've always said they need to be convinced that inflation is coming down. And the last couple of reports cannot have increased their level of conviction.
The first parents to be convicted over their child's involvement in a school shooting have been sent to prison for at least 10 years. James and Jennifer Crumbly were sentenced yesterday, more than 2 years after their son killed four students at his Michigan high school.
Breaking news from inside the Capitol building. Anti-Israel protesters just shut down the largest cafeteria on the Senate side, and they were chanting, according to our producers there, this is the house of the people. The Senate can't eat until Gaza eats.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard today's edition of Human Events Daily, live from Washington, D.C. Today is April 10th, 2024, Anno Domini, and I'm very excited to welcome an esteemed guest and honored to welcome Xi Van Fleet, the survivor of the Chinese Communist Revolution and outspoken author of the new book, Mao's America, here to the program. Xi, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much to have me.
And I must also, of course, say, 我非常高兴欢迎您来到三家我们的计划这边。
谢谢。 What a surprise.
No, 不用谢。
That you speak Chinese.
So tell it for folks who don't know, tell us your background just briefly, and then we have a quick break, and we'll come in for a longer segment here in a minute.
Yes. I grew up in Mao's China. I spent my first 26 years in China and my entire school years in the Cultural Revolution. And I witnessed the entire 10 years of the revolution. And after that, I was sent to the countryside by Mao to get my re-education. I was only able to go to college after Mao died and to study English. In 1986, I was able to come to America to pursue my graduate study. And I've been here for more than 30 years, never involved politically until 2020. And that's the time I know that I have to speak out and to save this country. And that's when I decided to go to the Loudoun County School Board and deliver that less than 1 minute speech, which to my great surprise went viral. And that's led me where I am today, being really a spokesperson against communism and against the indoctrination and in America.
Because everything that we are seeing today, and things that I learned about when I lived in China, and we were chatting before the show, First visited there in 2006, so almost 20 years ago, but also lived there for about 2 years and learned for the first time. I knew nothing. Before I went to China, I knew nothing about the Chinese Cultural Revolution. I had no idea that anything like this had ever happened. So I wouldn't say that I had been indoctrinated, but I was ignorant. I was ignorant of it because I had no idea that such a thing could have happened in my lifetime. I found out about it, and I heard about these things that took place. I couldn't believe it. And then it took so many years for people to finally start talking about it. And you've written the new book. I can't wait to ask you all about it. We are coming up on that quick break I mentioned. We're going to be back much longer next segment. Folks, we are so excited. We have Xi Van Fleet here with us. She's the author of Mao's America. Look, I know I talk about the CCP all the time, but I'm going to sit back and let you hear for once from someone who lived through it and came out to tell the tale. Stay tuned. Human Events Daily continues. I want to know the truth, what really went down. So I'm jumping on my computer, going to pre-order town. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the best ways that you can support us here at Human Events and the work that we do is subscribing to us on our Rumble channel. Make sure you're subscribed. You hit the notifications so you'll never miss a clip. You'll never miss a new live episode, and we're putting them out every single day of the week. But I got a hankering, a yearning deep inside. For this book called Unhumans, I just can't hide. All right, Jack Posobiec back live here, Human Events Daily. Folks, let me tell you something. You've heard about the earthquake that recently rocked the Northeast just a couple of days ago. Now, reminder, now that wasn't the big one, but when the big one hits, it's going to be too late to prepare. That's where today's episode sponsor comes in. My Patriot Supplies help millions of American families prepare for the uncertain future. Whether it's an economic crisis, World War III, or a natural disaster, many families, like mine, start with their three-month emergency food kit. With 22 food and beverage choices, you'll always have something tasty at your fingertips, and the kiddos will never get bored. With over 2,000 calories per day, you'll get all the nutrients you need, and the three-month emergency food kits come sealed inside ultra-durable packaging, and you can last up to 25 years. Stock up on all the food kits your family needs at MyPatriotSupply.com. You'll get each kit for $200 off. Protect yourself. Protect your people. Get your kits at MyPatriotSupply.com. They ship fast. They ship free. Look, you want to protect this because it's about your family and your family's future. You can start preparing right now at MyPatriotSupply.com, MyPatriotSupply.com. All right, we're back. And we had a short segment before, so I really want to give the floor to Xi Van Fleet here because you write in your book, Mao's America, that some of the things that you saw that growing up in China and beginning with the Chinese Cultural Revolution, which was actually a revolution within a revolution, because people don't understand that it was a revolution against the leadership of the Chinese Communist Party. And to bring people up to speed, and correct me if I have any of the story wrong, please, but it's in the wake of the Great Leap Forward, the massive famine that is instituted because of Mao's policies, this huge failure, so many Chinese people lose their lives, that Mao, the other leaders of the party start to say, maybe we should push him out, maybe we should get rid of him from power in the party. So even other members of the CCP wanted to take out Mao. So what does Mao do at that point? Well, he does the only thing he knows how to do. He launches another revolution against his own party, against the CCP, against the communist leaders to maintain power. And that's when he goes to the youth that he called the Red Guard. How did he do it? And tell us what you remember.
I'm so glad you got everything right. So in one word, summarize the Chinese Cultural Revolution, it is called seize power. Power from what? From his own party, from his own government. So that's why it is so much a parallel to what's going on in today's America. It's all about power. Keep that in mind. So I was only seven, just finished my first grade of my first semester of my first grade. And I call that the only somewhat normal education I got. And after I started second semester, Cultural Revolution started. And to me, it was like overnight just like to a lot of Americans, 2020 is almost like overnight. Overnight, our school stopped and there's no classes, and we were told that no school for 3 days, and that 3 days turned into 2 years. And what did we do? We had no school. We went out in the street and we witnessed the Cultural Revolution. And that was absolutely a world turned upside down. And I think some people have probably watched the opening scene of the a new Netflix series, The Three-Body Problem. And that was what's going on all over China. And struggle sessions against those people in power. And they were told that they were the ones that want to take us back to capitalism, to suffer one more time. And so we need to defend socialism. And who are those people in power? And for the kids, you know, the first thing that came in my mind is in their mind is teachers and the principals. That's their what they went after first. The teachers and the principals, and every one of the principals in China, without exception, have to go through the struggle session, just like what's portrayed in the Three-Body Problem opening scene. Some were killed right on the spot. And I just talked to a friend of mine. She witnessed the Red Guards put human feces into the professor's mouth and force him to eat it. And that's how barbaric that went. And you ask why? What happened to these kids overnight? It did not happen overnight, because those kids have been indoctrinated in the Mao's government school for 17 years. They knew nothing. They never taught real history. The only thing they know is that they are the children of the party. And Mao was our real parent. And so we were supposed to be revolutionaries, just like today. The kids, they want to be activists. We were taught we are the successors of the socialism of Chinese Communist Revolution. So we become really revolutionaries to overthrow everything, including the Chinese civilization. And what we're told to destroy the four O's: old culture, old idea, old habit, and old custom. That's everything that they can find. The statues, yes. They went to the temples and the churches, destroyed the statues. They changed the names of institutions, of their schools, of stores, and everything, including their own personal names. And that's what's going on in America today. And that is really the cancel culture, the Chinese cancel culture. Everything happened here. And a lot of people say, what happened in America? What's going on? And I have to tell you, it is nothing new. It happened in China. It happened to me. I was too little to be a Red Guard. I was only 7, but I witnessed everything. And eventually it became violence. And the first one to die in the hands of the Red Guards were a principal killed by her students. Bunch of young girls from 12 to 16 years old. They were the girls' middle school in Beijing, the most prestigious middle school. And those kids, overnight, turned into killers. And this is really coming to America.
And so the idea was that this violence was being done against principals, not because they were... not because the principal had committed violence to the students, or that the principal had committed some crime against the students, but it actually was out of loyalty to Mao and loyalty to the ideals of Chairman Mao, even to the point where the party leaders and party officials who were disloyal, they then too had to go on struggle sessions. They too could become black class. They too could become the right-wing fenzi. The counter-revolutionary extremes.
Fangoming.
And it's so important because people understand that the sign, right, the sign underneath their neck, that's your crime, right? That's the crime. Yeah. And there's no trial. This is the trial. The trial is what you're watching.
It is a trial.
And
it's the people's trial.
And right, yeah, it is a people's trial. And so I guess the difference for me, and we actually, so in my new book, Unhumans, one of the things we talk about is how what's changed is not the tactic. What's changed is the technology. And so the new cancel culture, it could be online, it could be social media, it could be on Twitter, it could be Facebook, whatever your, you know, TikTok, whatever the system is that it's digitized, and it's a new kind of fifth generation warfare version of what was going on all the way back in the 1960s into the 1970s in China. So it's the same tactic, but instead of having to, you know, gather everyone in the big arena or gather everyone in the big stadium, you use the internet and you use social media, you send a notification to everyone's phone. And so it's become a form of irregular warfare because it's all being done in the digital space. But at the same time, is the outcome any different? Because we're still seeing people lose their jobs. We're seeing people lose contracts. We're seeing people lose their reputation. And they are then sent essentially to the countryside in order to find some work. Isn't that right?
Yeah, they're not just losing their jobs. They're went after by the mobs. And then they are physically threatened. And so the violence will come right after. I mean, if we don't stop it. And I have to go back to what you're talking about of the Red Guard. What makes them hate their principals and teachers that much they want to kill? That is a great question. What happened? What happened is indoctrination. The teachers probably, I don't think the teacher did anything to them personally. And the principal did to them personally. But why they hate so much? Because the party told them now the enemy of the people are called the reactionary intellectual authority. So a label to a group of people, and that's enough. That's enough for the Red Guards to turn their hatred to their teacher. That yesterday they were just friendly and today they become enemy that need to be eliminated. And we see it happening here. The hatred is call someone that orange man bad, evil, and then that's enough for them to have that kind of hatred. They will go along with the left. Anything they can do is okay because this is the enemy of the state. And then MAGA is another, just like counter-revolutionary, right? If someone is labeled MAGA, well, that's the enemy of the state. So they use the same tactics. The only difference is, you know, as you said, technology has replaced some of the face-to-face struggle session. Now it's online.
Technological sessions versus in-person face-to-face struggle sessions. The tactics are the same. The only difference is the technology. Shi Van Fleet is here with us. Bombshell interview. Everyone needs to hear this. We'll be right back. Jumping on my computer, going to pre-order town. Could send a mystery, the hidden tales of the communist history. I want to know the truth, what really went down. So I'm jumping on my computer, going to pre-order town. Pre-order in line. All right, we are with Shi Van Fleet with one of the most remarkable interviews that we've ever done. We're telling the truth about what happened during the Chinese Cultural Revolution. Real quick, I want to tell you, though, folks, as we know, the world is in flames. Bidenomics is a complete and total disaster, but it cannot and will not ruin my day. Do you know why? It's because I start every day with a hot America First cup of Blackout Coffee. This coffee is 100% Americana. Blackout Coffee is 100% committed to conservative values. From sourcing the beans to the roasting process, customer support, and shipping, they embody true American values and accept no compromise on taste or quality. Look, I love this stuff. You guys are going to love it, too. Your business will love it. Go to blackoutcoffee.com/POSO. Use promo code POSO, 20% off your first order. Mother's Day is coming up. It's something great for moms and grandmoms, people close to you, the people that literally raise our society and the next generation. So that's blackoutcoffee.com/POSO, blackoutcoffee.com/POSO, promo code POSO20. So we're almost with Shi Van Fleet, and we've spoken about the Hong Weibing, the Red Guards, and we've spoken about the Pido Dahui, these struggle sessions. But she, tell me, what happened to the Red Guards after all of this went on? Because Mao, of course, has to end the Cultural Revolution at some point because they do completely go out of control. They stop listening to him, and he's got these newsletters and he used newsletters and radio. That was the technology of the time. Didn't even have TV yet throughout China. But at the end of it, the Red Guards became so violent, they became so out of control that even Mao couldn't really control them. So what did he have to do with them?
Yes, I have to go back a little bit that the Red Guards were given full power to go after people, go after property, go after everything, anything. And all they need to do is wear that armband, said Red Guards. And in the end of the first 2 years of the Red Guards movement, they took down all the so-called black class people, those in power, and then you know what happened? They start to fight each other because they thought now all the people in power was taken down by us. It is time that we share the power. We should have a seat at the table. They start to fight each other, and at that time it became almost like a civil war. Weapons were used, not sticks and stones anymore. It's absolutely the real weapon. A lot of them were killed by themselves. And eventually, it is so out of control. And Mao already achieved his goals because he got his political enemy out of power, and he have to deal with those rebels, the Red Guards. So what did he do? He used the military to suppress some of them, the most violent part of the Red Guards, basically kill them. And then what to do with the rest? He sent them to the countryside, all the gulags, and said, to get your re-education, you have been proving to be good revolutionaries, but not good enough. You have to go to the countryside and become better revolutionaries through physical labor. What happened to the Red Guards was tragic, so tragic that they are called the lost generation. After 10 years in the end of the Cultural Revolution, they came back, they lost school, they lost education, and they were too old to learn new skills, and they were basically abandoned and forgotten. And that's what happened to the revolutionaries. So today, the activists, you should take the lesson. And you have been used as pawns by the political radicals, and they were going to get rid of you. Or those looters, you think you can get away? And no. A gulag is what planned for you. So I think this is something that people really, really have to understand. Nothing going to end well for those who participated in this so-called revolution.
No, and of course, Mao was always using this to go after the other leaders in the party, people like Lin Biao, people like Liu Shaoqi, that, you know, whether they killed in prison or died in, you know, mysterious plane crash in Mongolia and all of these things. He was using it to go after rivals. And we don't have enough time to go all the way into it. There's quite a remarkable story about Deng Xiaoping, in that he was able to, you know, survive by, he had his train car, and he would be driving his train car all around Western China, just trying to stay away from the Red Guards, basically.
Yes. And so this is communism. People have no idea because they were never taught real history. Young people were taught that communism is all about sharing. No, communism is absolutely, it's a religion. And it also is a meat grinder. No one is safe under communism, not even the communists themselves. Communism killed more communists than any other people that are not communists. And that's something they need to know, and they don't. And that's the tragedy. And that's also by design. They don't want to teach Americans about communism.
Here's the thesis of the book, myself and Joshua Lysak, my co-author, Unhumans. We call it The Secret History of Communist Revolutions. And we focus on how communism takes hold in country after country. And China, of course, is a huge part of this. But we also do Russia. We focus on Spain, where it was defeated. We talk about Cambodia. We talk about the French Revolution, which was a sort of a proto-communist revolution. And our thesis in this is that, and the reason we call them unhumans is because that's what they do. They become unhuman and they unhuman others. It's also a verb. And that ultimately it isn't about sharing and it isn't about justice, that these words are window dressing and these words are marketing, that what it really is resentment. It is petty cruelty. It is anger. It is envy. And they never actually want and ultimately power. And the power, yes, not to create, but only the power to destroy. And I guess my sense is, and this is what I need to explain this to conservatives. I need to explain this to moderates, to liberals, to anyone who's not that far. Maybe even if there's good liberals still out there. These people do not have good intentions. They never did. They just want power, and they want the power to destroy those they view as their enemies.
Also, something I need to add, that why they go they use communism, Marxism, as their tactics to achieve power? Why don't they just come out and say, we want power, we want to control you? And the reason, of course, is communism and Marxism proving to be the most effective and deceptive tactic to reach the power. They never say, you know, we want power. They always say, we do it for the good of the people. Equity, we want to everyone to have the same thing. We want to spread the wealth. And it all started like that. And it started like that in America as well. Not today, not in 2020, long time ago.
Exactly. And so we're going to share this. Look at these leaders. And when they say the peasants, and they say, well, then there's also the class of the wealthy peasants. And this was Chairman Mao. So he, you know, his family was quite wealthy. Lenin's family was wealthy. They all have come from wealthy families themselves. And what it really is when you look at it today, you wouldn't say wealthy peasant. You would say maybe like a small business owner or an Airbnb owner, someone who has the squatters. I say, you've seen the squatter issue that's going on right now,
yes,
in America,
yeah,
with especially New York City. And I say, this is exactly, it's not just similar. This is exactly what would happen during land reform campaign in China, during the de-kulakization in Russia. If you had too much land, if they decided you had too much land, if they decided you had too much property, they would come and they would give it to someone poor or someone who is poorer than you. And if they decided that you were upset about it, you were arrested and you went to jail. I said, this is exactly what they always do.
But
it isn't even a little bit different.
But how long are they going to keep the land they were giving, the free land? And only 5 years later in China, all the land was taken back by the state in the name of the people. It's called the People's Commune. Even to
That's
up
right.
today, no one
yes.
owns any land. It's owned by the people. People, who are the people? State, the government. The people had need to know part two of communism. Too many of them were so attracted to part one. That's the slogan, and that was the beautiful narrative.
Yes.
They need to know part two, which is why I'm so passionate about educating Americans of what communism is really about. It's really about power. And they just use those attractive slogans to get you in and to follow them, to support them. And then you all become slaves. Communism is slavery.
I've always tried to explain it to people like this. When you think of the word communism itself in Mandarin, 共产主义. What does Gongchan mean? It means public property, collective ownership. So the opposite of private property is everyone owns property, which means no one owns property. What is the collective? Of course, as you say, it is the state.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's just nothing ends well with communism, nothing. And even those who got in for power, and then they end up become the losers of infight. Liu Shaoqi, the president of China, was the number one victim of the Cultural Revolution. He was taken out of, taken down from his position, and he was persecuted to death. Number two figure of CCP. No one is safe under communism.
you could be the most committed communist. You could be Liu Xiaoqi. He was Mao's number one man under Mao was Liu Xiaoqi. All through Long March, all through the Shanghai meeting, all through everything, everything that he did through the rise of China, and it didn't matter. Because at the end, Mao was so paranoid, he wanted so much power, he was so envious for himself, that even his own best friend was not immune to the ravages of this. This is an incredible interview. People need to understand the truth of this. And I want to talk about solutions, if we can. So we're going to hold you over, and we need to talk about what things people can do, big scale and little scale, to help improve the education about the truth in our country. Jack Posobiec back live here, Human Events Daily. Xi Van Fleet is with us. Now, Xi, there's real quick, I want to get into solutions with you. And solutions are important because we need to explain solutions to people. But let's ask a question, because people will also say to me, they say, how can this be a cultural revolution if the cultural revolution was about Chairman Mao? There's no Chairman Mao today. We don't see a Chairman Mao figure that's out right now. So how is this the same as a cultural revolution that China saw in 1960s to 1970s?
I always love to quote Mark Twain. History never repeats itself, but also often rhymes. You cannot really compare history event to event, and it's a different time, it's a different culture, it's a different world. But it is about power. And for Mao, he won power from his own party. He launched the Cultural Revolution. And here, too, the same thing. But we don't see a Mao. It doesn't matter. It's a group of people. Those are the globalists. They're not even Americans. They don't identify themselves as American. They want power. So they're doing exactly the same thing. But we just don't see them. But if we don't stop them, eventually another Mao will emerge from them, because they cannot share power. They will never peacefully share power. The one that is the most ruthless will emerge as the new Mao.
That's exactly right. And I've spoken about this. When we had Tucker on the program, I specifically put out that warning to say that we should not wait for a Chairman Mao to emerge, because once we get to that point, we are going to be so far behind in this. So in Unhumans, and by the way, would you agree, are these people, are they the Unhumans?
They're absolutely. They're demons. They're demons. That's the only way we can explain. Soulless.
Completely.
Demons. Yes.
Yes. And they are. It is demonic. It's absolutely demonic.
It's a perfect title for your book and
thank
for your show.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at this, we see people out there every day fighting at the higher levels. We see Elon Musk fighting for freedom of speech. We see Donald Trump fighting in the political arena, and so many people fighting in the political arena. And yet people come to me every day and they say, well, how can I fight back? I'm just one guy. I'm one dad. I'm one mom. I work. What can I do on a regular basis to fight back? And of course I say, make sure you share the show and, you know, get the word out. But let me ask you, what else can people do actively to fight back against this irregular cultural revolution that we are currently in?
I think we should believe in the power of we the people. And that's what the founding father believed in. And we all have power. We might not be able to do what Elon Musk or Tucker Carlson or Trump have been doing, but we all have power. And I always say the first thing is to understand that we are in a war, and we're in a war with radical communists, Marxists. They want to take over this country. So that is important. To watch your show, read my book, and your book is the first step. You have to understand in order to fight back effectively. And the second one is you have to get involved. You can't just get mad and become a keyboard warrior. You have to get involved, and you have to get involved locally. Locally, that's how I got involved, and that's how I decided to go to the school board. And school is the key to win this war. If we can't win back our education system, we cannot win back. We cannot win the war, period. And the school has become indoctrination centers for decades. And what's the solution? We have to bring back the classic education. And I know you're going to interview the founders of a classic school in Maryland. How do we get back? We have to teach the children the principles of American founding, the biblical values. That's what makes this country so great. And that's something that's totally missing. We need to make our education system to train the future responsible citizens, not activists, not revolutionaries. So the first thing we can do is get involved locally and go to school board. Hold your school board accountable. And everything we do has to be at the local level. Get organized, get involved. That's how we take back our country.
And this is so important, going to the school level and supporting those schools that we can find out there that have classical systems, that have, and yes, by the way, religious systems in many cases.
Yes.
Going to the school boards as well, who are teaching this stuff and controlling this. And that's something where it's a state, local, and federal issue, because we've made education in this country federal. It shouldn't be that way. It should be that the local school board and the parents of each school district should be able to determine whatever it is that their kids are learning, and they should be able to set the standards there, not some federal bureaucrat in Washington, D.C., having control of our child's education, over control of our schools. It's ridiculous, it's insane, and it's completely un-American. And what it is, it's much closer to something that you would see in one of these communist systems, where the centralization of power and the centralization of ideology, the centralization of everything, comes on that is where the word totalitarian comes from. It's the word
exactly.
Total control. And so
yeah,
the great beauty of the American system was that we would have decentralized power. We would have decentralized control, where people can say, this is what we want and this is what we will have, with those basics that are still I mean, they're trying to, you know, you're in the DC area as well as me. They want to change the name of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. They said Francis Scott Key, we've decided that he is it's just a recent example for us, but here we go, another one of a great American heroes, the man who wrote the song that is our national anthem. And so what I've said is they're going to use this bridge as a way to go after Francis Scott Key, and then they're going to use it as a way to say, you know, maybe we should have a new national anthem. Maybe we should have a Black national anthem and all of this. That's exactly what they're doing. Is it from your perspective, are you surprised? Are you surprised?
No. They were with no chance, no opportunity to push their agenda. Absolutely. In Virginia, they have changed so many schools that are named after our founding father. They will continue to do that, and they will not stop. And that's something I really want people to understand. Conservatives, please. This is not some fight that we just get involved and get over with. No, they have launched this revolution against America for decades. This is going to be a long fight, and we should not think this is just something I get involved and then we win. We have to be prepared, and I'm prepared, and this is going to be a long haul.
Are we approaching a critical point in history here? Is this something where we have a long time and people don't need to worry about it, or do they need to worry about it right now?
If you ask me, I have to be honest. And when I look at the people, when I look at things around me, something fundamental has changed. The American worldview, which is based on Christianity, and the Judeo-Christian value, has been replaced by Marxist worldview. We already fell off the cliff. We're fighting so that we have a soft landing. That's how bad things are. When I look at everything from this, from entertainment, from media, and from the young people, yeah, this is going to be a really, really hard fight. But we have to fight today and yesterday, which you started a long time ago.
We're approaching the critical point of history. Don't take it from me, folks. Look, the book is on humans. People can check it out. Her book is Mao's America. If you want to dig even further to find out how horrific these communists can be, go and read her book. Xi Van Fleet, we are so honored that you've been with us today and been so generous with your time. Where can people follow you?
Twitter. I tweet every day. And I do give parallels, the history lessons. So please follow me, XVANFLEET on X. Thank you so much for having me.
God bless. Thank you so much for being with us here today, Xi Van Fleet. Stay tuned, folks. We've got a very special surprise coming up in the very next segment. Please go follow her. But I got a hankering, yearning deep inside for this book called Unhumans I just can't hide. All right, Jack, so we're back live, Human Events Daily. So the question is, what do you do? What do you do in a situation like this when you feel like everyone's being indoctrinated? You feel like your government is not the government you remember? Well, it starts at the educational level. And if you've got a family, if you've got parents, or if you are a parent like myself and my wife, you might want to make sure that you're doing the right thing to educate the next generation. And even if you don't have kids, or even if you have grandkids, or just want to support something like this, you realize that there's something that's going wrong with our public schools. Our next guest, Ali Ghaffari, actually took this a step further and instituted a classical Christian and Catholic school in Maryland. And he's part of a new movement that I know about that's sweeping the country of people that are checking out. Ali, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on, Jack.
All right. Also, fellow Navy guy, got to throw it out there. Hoo-yah.
Yeah, go Navy.
So tell us, what led you to want to found Divine Mercy Academy?
So as you mentioned, we're a Navy family, so we traveled around the country a lot. We've seen a lot of schools, and I knew in my mind what I wanted for my kids. I wanted them to have an education that helped form them as people of character, but also one that strengthened their faith and teaches them to be critical thinkers. And we put them in some local schools here, some private schools, public schools, and we found the furthest thing from what we wanted. And so we took matters into our own hands and we started our own school.
And so when you wanted to put the school together, why was it so important to you to introduce the classic education system?
Back when I was in college, I bought into society that said everything's relative. There's no truth. And I was lost and I was terribly unhappy. But it was only through reading the classics and Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, where you learned that truth exists, that we ought to live lives of virtue. That led me out of that darkness, that loneliness, and into the light of living a good life, a life of human flourishing. And I wanted that badly for my kids. And so I said, that has to be the central part of any form of education. I just didn't know what it was called, or I'd never seen it before in the educational space. And then I heard about this classical educational model. There's a school in Hyattsville, Maryland called St. Jerome's Academy, which features it. And their story is amazing. But they turned this failing school around into this wildly flourishing school. And when I heard the story, I said, that's it. That's exactly what I want for my kids. But there were no schools near us that had that classical or Catholic liberal education model that was so prevalent for 2,000 years. I said, I need to start something for my own kids because the time's wasting. I only have so many years for my kids. I need to do something now.
And that's exactly right. And there's so many of these that I know for the War Room fans out there. I know that Steve Bannon talks about this a lot. There's so many of these classic academies. The Regina Academies are out there as another example, where people are coming together and saying that we want to put faith first. But even in addition to that, it's actually going back to those older, as you say, these older classics that are put right up there. So it's like, I talk about it this way. When I talk about Western civilization, I always say, well, people say, well, define Western civilization. What's Western? I say, it's very clear. It's very clear. Greek philosophy, Roman laws, and the morals of the Holy Bible. And if you put all of those three together, I think those are the three bedrock cornerstones of what gets you Western civilization.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And then the combination of those things together has been honed over a couple thousand years through the church. And in that way, we were able to create the greatest minds of Western civilization, St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Augustine, even our founding fathers were educated in this manner. And most of them, mm-hmm. in fact, almost all of them, didn't go to a public school. They studied at home. They were homeschooled for most of their education. And then they went out and they supplemented that in a free market economy of schools, not in some factory school where they were, ideology was just crammed down their throat.
That's right. And so, and these factory schools, it's so funny you mentioned it that way, because it's 100% right. This system was created by the Germans for factory workers. And it teaches you much more, you know, grade points. And this whole business went back to the idea that we're going to be crammed through. That's an assembly line form of school, as opposed to actual mastery of concepts, mastery of the arts, mastery of whatever specific discipline it is that you're focused on. It's pushing you through to maximize as many people as possible. I could make some army jokes there, by the way, but I'm not going to do that right now, even though we have some Navy guys on. You know what I'm talking about. But I would never do that because we love our army. We love our backpackers. And what it comes down to, though, is that's not really educating anybody, is it?
It's not. And, you know, for us, we went through public schools in all likelihood, or most of your listeners probably, and we don't know any differently. But American education wasn't always the way it is today. As I mentioned, the time of the founding fathers, we had the most educated population in the world. And those folks were educated using predominantly homeschooling methodology, these cheap primer books that their parents would teach them with. They would have tutors, they'd have local churches providing education, entrepreneurs out there, and we created the most highly educated system in the world. But this changed as a result of some early educational reformers. Horace Mann is one, John Dewey is another, where they had some ideas about creating utopia or communism, creating a system where the state controls the education in the formation of children. They had a failed experiment of creating a commune called New Harmony in Indiana back in the 1820s. And they said the reason this failed is because our children were too formed. The people were too formed. So we need to get the children as early as we possibly can when they're a blank slate. And we need to form them the principles of communism so they can realize this utopia on Earth. And so these ideas got to Germany and informed their educational system there, where they created this state-based educational system, which then came yes. back through Horace Mann to the state of Massachusetts and then spread into America, where we had these schools that were the state created the formation, where they thought the state believed it could form children better than parents could, and said, we want to indoctrinate these children with these socialist ideologies.
And this is where
so that they can become slaves to the state.
And this is where the belief of the state being in charge of this came from. The website is divinemercy.md. I apologize, we're running up on the end of the show. We're going to get you on, though, for a longer block, because this is fascinating, the actual history of where our current education system came from and an understanding of how we got here and how to get out of it. Divinemercy.md. Make sure everybody checks it out and checks out this movement. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, you have my permission to lay a shoe.